Morning, ladies and gentlemen. Before we begin, I want to tell you that the third member of today's panel, Judge Williams, is unavoidably out of the city today because of an illness in the family. So she has read the briefs and she will listen to the tapes of oral argument and participate in the decision, but she will not be attending the oral arguments today. Our first case this morning is Al Hassan against Hagee.
Good morning, Your Honor.
Mr. Nassim Sabbat.
My name is Charles Nassim Sabbat, appearing on behalf of the appellant Rashin Al Hassan. Al Hassan meets the criteria for a conscientious Luderman, for a conscientious objector or CO status. He has conscientious opposition to participation in war in any form. Two, his opposition is founded on religious belief and training. And three, his opposition is sincere and deeply held. Al Hassan must be judged within the three corners of the criteria. The district court found that he has conscientious opposition to war. Respondents accept this finding. This meets the first corner. There is abundant evidence before you that his opposition to war is founded on religious belief. There is no evidence of any other foundation. A chaplain and an investigating officer, or IO, were the only interviewers who addressed the criteria and both found that Al Hassan met the criteria. They expressed no reservations as they documented that his opposition to war is founded on the belief that God does not allow the taking of human life. This meets the second corner of the triangle. Also, both found him to be sincere. This meets the third corner. Yet respondents deny the application. They want to force Al Hassan to violate his innermost beliefs, to force him to become what he considers to be a killer on demand, to commit what he considers to be a mortal sin. He would rather die than kill. He's convinced that if he kills anyone, he will go to hell. To uphold the denial of CO status, a court must find a basis in fact within the three corners of the regulations. Denial must rest on hard, reliable, provable facts and not on speculation, suspicion, or mere disbelief. In Lemons, this court found unanimously the following rule: when CO status is denied, it must be clear what determination was made and the factual basis for that determination. Otherwise, CO status must be granted. The district court did not follow the Lemons rule when it denied Al Hassan's application. It actually did not find any basis in fact. It concluded that there are factors that could make officials question his convictions. A question is no basis in fact. Respondents now urge this court to go beyond the three corners and to discard well-settled precedents. The chaplain had recommended that the CO application be denied because of, I quote, a lack of development in his faith system. Thus, the chaplain added a fourth corner to the triangle, seeking to validate this new faith development requirement. Respondents urge this court to discard the Welsh and the unanimous Seeger Supreme Court decisions because they expressly bar such requirements. As this court warned in Joyce, such a requirement could result in discrimination against some forms of religion. We ask this court to continue to uphold an individual's freedom of conscience as enunciated in Seeger, Welsh, and Joyce.
Is it possible, counsel, for a conscientious objector to be in the military at all? That is, what role, in your view, does the requirement that the objection be to participation in war in any form play? And it sounds like, as you've articulated, your client has a selective objection. He's opposed to killing, but he's not opposed to being a member of the military, just as long as he's not in combat.
In his written statements, which you have seen, he sees the Marine Corps as a death-making machine.
But he's continuing to participate in the Marines.
I'm sorry?
Right, he's continuing to participate in the Marines. Even
yes.
After his religious conversion, he continued driving a truck for the Marines and participating.
Well, he didn't know.
He objected only to being sent into combat.
Your Honor, he did not know that one could apply for conscientious objection And when he found out, as soon as he found out, he made his application. You must understand.
And did he immediately stop participating in all marine activities?
He felt he had no choice. He has been sent to another marine base.
Most likely he would have been sent to the brig, but that's often the consequence of standing on one's religious beliefs. Right? One might interpret his behavior as saying, I'm a conscientious objector so long as it doesn't impose any costs on me.
Well, there have been historically conscientious objectors who agreed to participate in activities but were not directly connected to combat. He decided he wanted to be a dutiful individual and he will abide by the regulations of the Marines. He did not want to participate in war. He applied for conscientious objector status, hoping to be discharged immediately. I think that he's maintained that position straightforwardly. He's driving a truck. You're right, Your Honor.
But that's exactly the problem. The requirement is opposition to war in any form. And a distinction between I'm willing to drive a truck, but I'm not willing to go into combat, is not one that the law recognizes.
Your Honor, I think that this young man felt that as long as he could obey orders without killing while maintaining the situation in limbo.
Let's assume that's perfectly sincere. It's still not what the law deems to be conscientious objection. You have to be totally opposed to being in the military. And that doesn't seem to be his position. His position is he's drawing lines between what military tasks he will and won't do. And I can't see that the law permits him, as opposed to the military, to draw those lines.
He's forced to drive a truck, Your Honor, as I see it. He's forced to do that.
Yes, I must say no one is forced. The number of sincere conscientious objectors who went to jail rather than drive a truck during the Vietnam War is substantial.
Yes, Your Honor, but it's not unanimous. Many other conscientious objectors continued various activities until the case was settled. I reserve the rest of my time for my rebuttal, Your Honor.
Mm-hmm. Certainly, counsel. Mr. Lansing.
May it please the court, I'm Lieutenant Commander Brian Lansing on behalf of the United States Marine Corps Appellees. The standard of review in conscientious objector cases is the narrowest standard of review known to the law.
What does the Corps say are the criteria to establish a conscientious objector status?
Your Honor, the Marine Corps says that an applicant for conscientious objection must demonstrate three things. First, an opposition to war in any form. Secondly, that the opposition is based upon religious training and belief. And third, that the position is sincere and deeply held.
Oh, the third one is not one you dispute, is it?
We dispute the second part of the third standard, Your Honor, because...
Deeply held?
The deeply held.
How would you know?
Because, Your Honor, the kinds of things that one would look into to see whether or not a position is deeply held would be that there is some foundation for the applicant's belief. It's not something that it has just occurred.
Well, that knocks St. Paul out of the box, doesn't it?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
I said knocks St. Paul out of the box, doesn't it? A conversion along those lines would not be one that the Marine Corps would recognize? Or the military at all? A sudden conversion, a sudden knowledge that God wants you to do something else?
Well, Your Honor, I believe that the standard speaks to the fact that...
I understand what the standard says, but I want to know how you'd establish that this is a deeply held one that you seem to think that he misses on.
Yes, Your Honor. The investigating officer found below, as did the district court, that his beliefs were not deeply held.
I understood what they found. I want to know how you know somebody's feelings or thoughts are deeply held as opposed to just held.
Well, I think several things can be looked at factually that the applicant brings forward. First of all, how nobody's doubting the appellant's sincerity in this
okay.
case. However, as to the deeply held prong, the Ninth Circuit in Roby delved into this very issue.
You know, citing the Ninth Circuit to this court is almost counterproductive. But I want to know what you think a examining officer or psychiatrist or chaplain would use as criteria to determine that the applicant's position is not deeply held.
Your Honor, it is definitely a subjective determination.
Right.
I will grant you that. However, the fact that an applicant, such in this case, asserting that his beliefs were deeply held, would participate in advanced combat training, would...
This is after he made that assertion?
This is before he makes the assertion, but after he says that he
had
formed the belief. Yes, Your Honor. He complains that he formed the belief back in boot camp.
Well, maybe the conversion is not as rapid as all that, but it can reach a depth at some stage of the game, can it?
Yes, Your Honor. And one would think that a person who holds a deep belief such as this would, as Judge Estabrook was saying before, would manifest that in some additional way than simply by continuing on with his unit, attending pre-deployment training.
So that if he continues, if at the moment of conversion he doesn't immediately say, to hell with it, I'm not going to do this anymore, he is obviously not deeply involved in his beliefs.
Well,
the fact that he gives it some reflective time and works on it and comes to an absolute conclusion during the time he's working on these things, that the Marine Corps feels is not sufficient.
No, Your Honor, the beliefs can crystallize over a period of time. I don't think that there's any argument that one can.
Yeah, it took me 3 years to get through law school too. So go ahead.
Exactly, Your Honor. However, the factors that the investigating officer had to review at the time that the board was held suggested that the applicant in this case, Lance Corporal Al-Hassan, did not have a deeply held belief because he had first stated under oath only 6 months prior that he was not a conscientious objector.
The day before he got knocked off his donkey, St. Paul was persecuting Christians. Go ahead.
Lance Corporal Al-Hassan also never expressed these beliefs to anyone in his chain of command or to those who were most close to him. One would think that somebody who holds a belief such
should
as this
should babble about it at least.
Should at least tell someone, Your Honor, yes. Should at least tell someone in authority over him, someone in authority who makes the decision whether or not he were to go to war.
Well, he's wrestling with his own conscience during that period. You think he should expose this to people in order to demonstrate that his conscience is bothering him?
Yes, Your Honor.
That's an interesting aspect.
Yes, Your Honor.
Our silent sins are ones we should reflect on publicly, I suppose.
Your Honor, at a minimum, someone who is sincere and who deeply holds a belief that war is wrong and that he cannot be a part of an institution that engages in war should, at a minimum, be expected to articulate that and to say, I can't be part of
this. Don't misunderstand me. I understand your position. I understand the position of the Corps. I'm just trying to find out how, in the name of the Lord, you figure out whether anybody's position is sincerely and deeply held, if that's right, because I'm still baffled by this. I wrestled with this some 35 years ago when I was at a district court and when I was United States Attorney prosecuting people in this system. I want to know whether over these years you have developed a better way of finding out whether somebody's beliefs are deeply held or not. And I apparently discovered that they have not changed, that they are still subjective, it's still a... What rolls against the wall?
It is subjective, Your Honor, but the best that one can do, that an investigating officer or a district court can do, is look at the totality of the factors, the totality of the evidence that's presented, and to try to
I don't want you to become so clairvoyant that you beat God at the business. I just want to know why we decide this objector has a deeply held belief and this one doesn't. And I guess you can't tell me either, can you?
Well, Your Honor, it's always going to be a subjective determination, and the regulation recognizes that and gives guidance to an investigating officer as to the types of things that have to be taken into an account when we're looking at and we're trying to judge both the sincerity and the depth of the belief. In this case, Lance Corporal Al-Hassan also could point to nothing in his past, such as attendance at church, such as...
We're back to St. Paul again. So what this, incidentally, and this has nothing to do with our case, I suspect, but is this the type of a Marine you'd like to go into combat with?
Your Honor, that is a practical determination that his military commanders would have to make.
I ask you, what would you feel about it?
Well, Your Honor, I'm not his commander.
I know.
I can't make that decision. But
okay, he's to cover
so
your
really what
he's
what
to
I
cover think. Your back as you're going through these things. He's the guy behind you.
Well, the fact that his military commanders may or may not decide to place him in combat is something that...
I said it had nothing to do with the case. I was just curious as to how you
Yes, Your Honor, but that's a fair point. And I think that the court can take some comfort in the fact that military commanders, based on their military training experience, can make that determination for themselves and do the right thing.
I saw one more line at you. I also served in the military, so I have some.
Yes, Your Honor. And that the decision whether or not he goes to combat is a separate decision from whether or not he remains in the Marine Corps and should remain and fulfill his obligation. I see my time is short. If there are no further questions from the panel, I would ask that the court affirm the decision of the district court below. Thank you.
Thank you. Anything further, counsel?
Yes, thank you. About deeply held, respondents cite the Robbie decision, and the Robbie decision specifically says the depth of feeling is important because we have to make sure that the applicant does not have fleeting beliefs. Now, if you take the time it took for the application to be processed within the military, was 4 months. He had 4 months to change his mind. He did not. Since then, it's been 16 more months. He has 16 more months to change his mind, and he did not. So it's not a fleeting belief, which was what Robbie called...
Well, the specter of war still hangs over him, altering that period of time. I understand him. What impels him so that he can go on for 20 years, I suppose. But as long as he stays out of combat, he doesn't have a problem. Is that right?
No, I don't agree, Your Honor. He is now in a state of suspension, he wants to go on with his life. He does not want to participate
He wants
with
to go,
the
on,
Marine
Corps. Go on with his life outside of the Marine Corps.
Go on with a productive life. He wants to be a physician and help save human lives.
A noble aspiration.
I'm sorry?
A noble aspiration.
Yes, sir.
Or a lawyer to save people from things.
Now, about his not telling his chain of command, when he was in boot camp, he did tell his drill instructor, Sergeant Benke, that he was opposed to war, and Sergeant Benke did submit a statement to that effect. Now, the events we're talking about occurred during a period of about 3 weeks. Mid-January, he's told to report to a given unit, and February 7th is when he applies for conscientious objector status. I think it's unreasonable for one to expect that in those 3 weeks he would have formed personal relationships with people in command so that he would then be in a situation where he can open up to them and express his beliefs. Your Honor, I think that the regulations are clear. He satisfies the criteria for conscientious objection. He has proved that these are not fleeting beliefs, but deeply held. He says he would rather die than take someone else's life. There is no there's not any evidence on the record.
Suicide bomber.
There's not a single piece of evidence on the record denying the sincerity of his beliefs or the depth of his beliefs. You have several testimonials from other individuals saying how deeply he holds these. And the military has just speculation and suspicion about the depth of his beliefs. They have no proof whatsoever. Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Thank you, Counsel. The case is taken under advisement. The court will now take a very brief recess.